working to defend American interests all over the Islamic world. Anybody who would do some foul mit like that is not only unfit to be president, and the polls show most Americans agree, but like my Uncle Bernie down in Florida would say, that there boy don't even amount to a low-down, dirty, egg-sucking dog. From New York City, this is Plato Benjamin with a commentary on the times.
And that's some of the news for Thursday, September 20th, 2012. The news was produced in New York with Jose Santiago, Rebecca Miles, and Plato Benjamin. I'm Andrea Sears in New York for the WBAI, listener-supported news.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, Cabal. This is WBAI in New York City. Good morning. Radio Unnameable here, and it's also WFTE in Mount Cobb and Scranton, Pennsylvania. More or less about that later. This is Bob Fass. Bill Propp is on his way. Paul Lovelace is sitting in the studio with me, looking as though he became very fatigued, but the result was quite satisfactory. We had a great time last night. I mean, a really great time last night. But now is the time for you to call your friends who haven't been listening to WBAI for a while or who have. I mean, I was listening on the way in, and I thought it was okay. I see Bill hasting down the hall. He's chugging along. He'll be here in a moment. He's listening to that Duquesne whistle blowing, and nothing is going to stop him. But Bill is here, and Bill had a good time last night, let me tell you. We'll tell you something more about the good time after we get into the program. But call your friends. Tell them to call 209-2900, area code 212, and maybe Paul Lovelace will explain to them what's going on, because... Well, you know.
I'm searching for phrases to sing your praises. I need to tell someone. Soon after midnight, and my day has just begun. A girl named Honey took my money. She was passing by. It's soon after midnight, and the moon is in my eye. My heart is cheerful, it's never fearful. I've been down on the killing floors. I'm in no great hurry, I'm not afraid of your fury. I faced stronger walls than yours. Charlotte's a harlot, dresses in scarlet. Mary dresses in green. It's soon after midnight, and I've got a date for the fairy queen. Thank you. and they chatter. What does it matter? The lion, the dying, and their blood. Two time and slim. Who's ever heard of him? I'll drag his corpse through the mud. It's now or never, more than ever. When I met you, I didn't think you would do. It's soon after midnight, and I don't want nobody but you.
Like I say, good morning again, Cabal. This is Bob Fass. And Bill Propp is sitting here still reeling from last night, where people were crowding around him and asking him to write autographs with magic markers on their backs. It was just the kind of thing that he's always been dreaming of. But last night, to make it clear to most of you who don't know, probably don't know what I'm talking about, there was a spectacular opening at the Film Forum last night of the radio unnamable movie. And then everyone who had a ticket went, or not everyone, but everyone who had a ticket could go to a place called the Amity Bar and get a free drink. I mean, I've never heard of anything like that. I know they give out ditty bags at openings. You know, I didn't see any ditty bags. But this was a free drink. And boy, watching the movie, I got pretty thirsty. I really got pretty thirsty. There is a full page spread picture of Paul and Jessica, Paul Lovelace, and Jessica Wolfson, who produced this, directed this, supervised the editing and the selection of the music and everything. I mean, they like wheeled me from one place to another, and they went through my archive, and they got it deep into my archive, and they did a kind of job that has, I can't imagine a collection of reviews that are as good as this, from Variety to the unreconstructed Marxist.
Unrepentant
Marxist. Marxist. That's much better, I think. It was a good, really perceptive review that appeared on this blog. Not to say that there wasn't a good review in Variety and the New York Times and Jewish Week and in Current and in the Forward and in the Daily News. I mean, all so far, there have been Rotten Tomatoes that have all been positive.
We're fresh, 100% fresh.
I mean, I guess you have to say it's a very, very wonderful, wonderful. Then on the other hand, I've been on the air for 50 years, right? And if you can't find 90 interesting minutes in 50 years, you're not really trying.
You're a hack.
So thank you and congratulations, Paul.
Well, congratulations to you, Bob, and to you, Bill.
Put it all together.
There is some sort of way that people who want to help WBAI can get tickets to it. There's there'll be a specially selected WBAI screening that might be fun to.
Monday at 6:15. I think there's still some tickets left, where if you email popcorn@wbai.org and buy a ticket, you get free popcorn and soda.
Whoa.
And Film Forum, as many people know, they do have the best popcorn in the city.
I didn't have any. I've heard that, but I didn't.
Well, you'll be there tomorrow night, so you can try some popcorn.
Yeah, I'll be there tomorrow night, and I find it necessary to do what you might think is an advertisement for the Film Forum. They have a bunch of other great films that they're running. So if you wanted to, you could spend a couple of days there and see a classic French film.
Port of Shadows. Well, I mean, you could go in the afternoon and see Port of Shadows, then go see Brazil after that. And then
Brazil is one of my favorite movies of all time. Really, it's Terry Gilliam.
Terry Gilliam.
The director. And I can't hear that song anymore, Brazil, without thinking of like a kind of a desperate common kind of fascism, a society that values individuals as much as Mitt Romney does, you know. I mean, it's like Mitt Romney's most far-out dream of a society, but at the same time, it's surreal, and it has angels flying through the air and rescuing people, and people I don't know how much of this I'm giving away of the movie, but the angels and the surreal moments in the movie of, I guess, escape are in the mind of someone who's being tortured.
Right.
It's a great, I mean, even funny movie. But it's a horror. Now,
are you going to go watch it this week?
No, I'll be sitting and watching the movie that you made over and over again. How many shows a day are there?
Five. The last screening of the day just ended about a half an hour ago. So maybe a listener out there or two were at that screening, and they could report back to us.
Maybe. Maybe they'll storm the building. I don't know. I don't know. But it was a great night for me last night. I saw people who I haven't seen in 20 and 30 years, and I saw people that I have wondered about what happened to them. Where are they? Like one of the things about doing a radio program over and over again for so long is that you have 3 or 4 hours of intense meeting with someone who is in most cases very interesting, you know, and then you lose track of them. You never see them for another 10-15 years. They're in town, maybe they call you. I see Rory Block is going to be back around this way again. Be great to have her come back. And I saw people who were in the movie that you located and Paul found, I hadn't seen them in years and years, and many of them was WBAI volunteers. There was one in particular who he was a wonderful volunteer, and somehow we lost track of her, and no one knew where she was, and she was there last night. It was great to see. I guess I could say it's Birdie, who used to come and answer the phone.
She's in the film.
Yeah, she's wonderful in the film. And I see, you know, the what we call one of the earlier crisis catastrophes, you know. And there was the face of Lynn Samuels and Margot Adler and lots of people. Margot was in the film, actually, and Liza Cowan.
Who came last night.
Came last night.
Yeah,
I meant to talk about her a little bit on the, you know, during the Q&A, but I was so, I was a little rattled.
We also didn't have that much time. I mean, it was only 15 minutes for the Q&A, so.
Right.
And again, it went by very fast.
You're very good at, condensation, you know. I have to talk about 90 minutes in 15 minutes, and you did 50 years in 85.4 minutes, I think it was. But it's really a wonderful job you did.
Oh, well, thanks. And 5 or 6 years ago, I think that was the first time, for me at least, coming up here. So this is... I don't want to say full circle because I assume I'll be back, but it's a pretty incredible feeling.
5 years. I've seen you get married.
Have a kid.
Have a wonderful kid who rides around in a radio flyer.
Courtesy of two very generous individuals.
Truck. Is it a truck or a car? I don't know, but what it needs now is seat covers, I think.
The radio flyer?
Yeah.
For the listeners,
maybe he wants to trade it in for a new model.
No, I think he's good to go till he's about 3 or 4. Oh. There's even a pouch for if we want to bring beer with us when we go to the park.
And I hope he never hears this tape and is embarrassed by it. But we had a conversation, you and I, last week about, you know, significant matters. And you were changing his diaper as you talked to me. It was one of those moments.
You know, you gotta, it's multitasking.
I don't think that's what it usually means, but there was certainly a lot of group sourcing that went into making this movie.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Paul Krasner, who was in it, said some wonderful things about it. I don't know whether he blogged them or anything, but he so did. I got a call from Wavy Gravy. Maybe he'll call in tonight. And
did you talk to Wavy?
No, I didn't. I just found the message on my machine. And I know he knows to call whenever. I'm sure that the chief will call and give us a chant or two. Phones are beginning to ring. 209-2900 is the number to call. If you want to talk on the air, you want to talk privately, my... voicemail at the station hasn't functioned for a while. I used to like to be able to get messages on that, but the chief engineer was trying to explain to me how to set it up, and in the middle of it, a truck came roaring by outside my house, and I couldn't hear the instructions that, and I didn't remember how to re-cue the instructions, so I just left it. Maybe somebody who's more adept at these things can figure out how to do that for me, but I'm not so good at that. Hey, maybe somebody who works for Verizon will come in and set up my voicemail sometime.
You probably know a few people.
Well, we do know Birdie.
You know one.
Right.
But she's retired now.
She is.
Yeah. That was... I think she's going to come back again. She said she's going to come back and see the movie again. So.
Oh, great!
I mean, it's really moving. All these people coming to.
I met people who I knew because I knew their roommates. You know, I met people there who have gone to law school. And become, you know, the bane of existence of the world, lawyers. And I met people who, I guess you know, not that any the other people were less exciting, but it was really a wonderful, wonderful kick to see Andrew Hoffman there.
Oh, yeah.
Abby's son. It was marvelous. And he's in great shape. Yeah. He's been living in Fiji. And then he lived in L.A., and he was into baking and making bread, delivering bread to people. And now he's he's looking for a place in New York. And, of course, I mean, I'm not going to list all the names of the people who I met last night. There were, I don't know how many, at least 200 people in the...
Sold out.
Sold out.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the second show did pretty well, too.
I think there were, I mean, I don't know exactly how many, but yeah, it did well. So it's...
Is that prior to the screening we saw?
After
you and I were talking at about 10 o'clock in the morning, and you said, "At this very moment, the first showing of the film is taking place."
Right, 1 o'clock asked me, you're like, "Is the movie showing right now?" And I looked, and it was 1 o'clock, right when it began.
Well, I hope people come to see it at least a few times. Because the success of the New York run will determine how quickly it gets out to the rest of the country and how quickly it gets onto DVD. And
we have a great distributor, too, Kino Lorber, and they're going to put out the DVD, release it throughout the... You know, throughout North America, it's terrific.
And the subway,
and exactly.
And because of your efforts, they're very well disposed to a WBAI at the moment, and they said that they would be willing to make all of their films, and they have 200 in their category in their catalog.
It's an amazing catalog.
They make all of them available from time to time as premiums for WBAI.
Do I hear movie talk?
Everything
movie tour
from
coming up? Maybe? What? Do I hear movie tour coming up, possibly? A tour?
I don't know. Why don't we answer some of those calls? There are probably people who want their money back.
I don't think so. I really don't. Let's see. Okay.
Hello, you're on the radio. Oh, what made you think of calling tonight? You say there was no thought involved. It's an obsession that you can't control.
Guess so.
Uh huh. Well, how's your health?
50-50.
50-50. You mean you're improving some? Last time you spoke to me, you said that you were terminal.
Right. Well, I'm 50 terminal and 50 alive.
Well, I bet you can probably give us a better explanation than that.
You mean better odds?
No. 50-50 is, you know, even money, that's...
Could go one way or the other.
Not bad. It can go it can go 50-50 just crossing a street, you know.
I know.
You
know?
Don't pay him. He'll give you more time.
Right. Who told you that?
A doctor.
Where'd you find this doctor?
He works at Einstein College.
Oh. Did he happen to know Einstein?
Right.
He was friends with Einstein?
Uh-huh.
He was a buddy?
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Well, Einstein was not a physician, you know. He was a physicist.
Right.
He was a mathematician.
Well...
So he would have told you about odds, maybe.
Right. Well, the legend of the chief will live forever. I don't know, you know, the new religion and all that. But I don't know if I'll be here.
Hey, chief, is one legend to another. They're calling me a legend. I don't like it. It means something at the bottom of the map, you know, something that has been overlooked but ought not to have been. You know, don't let them call you a legend.
Or that you sit on, right?
It's all image.
Of course.
It's image.
A leg end is something you sit on. Now, maybe you qualify for that a little bit. But
right. Anyway. What about our image, though?
Well, you know, there was an artist there last night, who told me about some other artist that she knew, who used to put his behind in a bucket of paint and then sit on the floor and then sell the canvases.
Well, I could do better than that.
I'm sure you could. And I think you should get busy doing it right now. We're going to answer another call.
See the movie. See the movie. You'll love it.
See the movie, but don't do that in the theater and they'll throw you out. You're on the radio. Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Hello? Yes. If you turn your radio down, it'll be easier for us to hear you.
I'm not sure.
Good. Good. Hello?
No, I can't hear you.
Oh, it's our lousy phone system again. I'm sorry. You can't write.
Well, how are you doing?
How's that? Do you still have the delay?
There is a delay, but it's okay. I'll just be in two rows at once.
So, okay. That's very far out. So I
was wondering, I just saw the film at the Film Forum tonight.
Oh, you were there tonight?
It was wonderful. I'm very glad I saw it.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Now that you've established that you're a great person, what's your name?
My name is Lauren, but that's all I can say.
Lauren. Well,
thank you, Lauren.
Thank you. That's sufficient to just so that the next time you call, you can be recognized. You know?
I was wondering if I could read something on the air.
You see, you let somebody get on your Facebook page, and then they immediately want you to publish them. Absolutely. Go ahead. Read it.
No, I didn't write this. This is age old.
Read it.
Okay. Give me 1 second, okay?
I'll give you as long as it takes to read it. How long is it, I should ask?
It's not long. Don't worry.
Read it, please.
Okay, it's called The World. Do not live in the world in distraction and false dreams outside the law. Arise and watch. Follow the way joyfully through this world and beyond. Follow the way of virtue. Follow the way joyfully through this world and beyond. Follow the way of virtue joyfully. For consider the world a bubble, a mirage. See the world as it is, and death shall overlook you. Come, consider the world a painted chariot for kings, a trap for fools, but he who sees goes free. As the moon slips from behind a cloud and shines, so the master comes out from behind his ignorance and shines. The world is in darkness. How few have eyes to see. How few the birds who escape the net and fly to heaven. That's about it.
That's very appropriate for the days of awe.
And you know what that is?
No.
That was the Buddha.
The Buddha?
The Buddha. Not him himself.
It's the sayings of the Buddha.
Right.
Uh-huh. As collected by...
This particular one, let's see. I don't know if it says. No, I don't know. Just a little book I have.
Just an anonymous artist, huh? Well, all right. I thank you very much for that. That's beautiful and appropriate.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Buddha's my bud, too.
I know. You're on the radio.
Hey there.
Who's this?
I saw the movie on its premiere at the Brooklyn Academy of Music, and I dug it.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks.
Bob, I'm having trouble hearing you. This phone is... Meshuggah.
Well, I don't know how come it's doing that, but there probably is an engineer who knows how to fix it, and he's I don't know.
Oh, I was talking to my friend in Pennsylvania, and he came across fine. All right, let me say what I need to say. Except for the fact that you showed the 1988 Rye, but you only showed like a minute or two. You left out a whole history of the Lower East Side on the 90s.
As Paul kept saying...
Huh, Bob?
Paul, the director, kept saying to me for the last 5 years, it's only a 90-minute movie. It's only a 90-minute movie. And you're right, it really deserves some kind of in-depth study.
Yeah, I mean, we could spend 50 years talking about what was cut out of the film.
I'm talking about what happened around around Tompkins Square when the first thing that I thought was really important was that when New York was suddenly conscious that it had a homeless problem or a houseless problem. People who didn't have a place where they could go under a roof and lie down and sleep comfortably and wake up warm and take care of themselves.
Cutting you off.
That's okay. Let me finish, and then you won't be cutting me off. I know I take a long time to say stuff.
Oh, it's all
right. The community around Tompkins Square was the one place in the city where, you know, large numbers of people came out to help the homeless. They set up a camp for them in Tompkins Square. They bought them tents, and they made an encampment in the middle of this park, which had been the home of, recreation and cool breezes in the summertime and places to... you know, walk in semi-green spot for, all of the time that I've known about New York City. Sidney Smith has just walked into the room, handed Paul a note. Uh-huh. But Steve Post told me a story tonight. Pardon me, Carl. I'll tell it later. But I just want to say that history of the Lower East Side was... you know, very exciting and very wonderful.
Yeah, I just want to say that I was one of those people around that time that lived in the park in winter 1991. And, you know, we used to take garbage cans and light them up at night to stay warm during the winter. We fought the cops in the fire department over that, over the right to have lit garbage cans so we could stay warm.
That's right.
You know, it was the cop... that put out a lit garbage can one night when Edmund Rutter, a homeless black man, and he froze to death because the bleeping pig put out a lit garbage can. That's why he froze to death in Tompkins Square Park.
That's right.
So that was a hard-won right that we fought for, the homeless in the park fought for, as well as the riot of August 6th and 7th, to keep the park open so the homeless could live in the park.
That's right.
And we can talk about the squats also.
Clayton Patterson is writing a book about that history.
And there's a movie about him that goes into quite a bit of detail.
Well, there ought to be a movie about Carl, too. He's...
I can barely hear you guys, so I'm going to go.
I'm sorry. Maybe if Sidney's in a good mood, he can show us what's wrong with the phones, you know, why we're having trouble with them.
I don't think so.
You don't think he's in a good mood?
No, not that I think he's not in a good mood. I don't know if this phone can be fixed with a flick of the wrist or something.
I hear other calls on the air that don't have any problem.
Maybe if we try a megaphone, Amy.
I don't know. I think it's probably just a simple adjustment that someone changes back so that we will have trouble. That's my paranoia, maybe. But
that park does have an immense history to it, going back to the 19th century when they were chasing union leaders out of the park. I mean, it was back as long as they were within New York City with more than one borough. Samuel Gompers.
Right.
It has tremendous heritage.
And there was once a mayor who was even more clueless than Bloomberg, and he went down there and gave out bread to hungry people. And of course they ran out of bread before they ran out of hungry people. And there were the bread riots in Tompkins Square Park. And then for all of the years that, you know, people lived in those tenements, those crowded tenements in that neighborhood, they would, you know, when they weren't trying to keep cool on their fire escapes, they would go to Tompkins Square Park to get a breath of air.
And then when we've gone full circle at times, police have arrested people giving out food as well. That's to right. There and to Washington Square yeah, Park.
That was a
including
real,
a rabbi.
Real scandal, yeah.
Yeah.
That is a great history. It should be memorialized somehow. But I was going to tell a story about Steve Post. I don't know whether I have his permission to tell a story, but I guess... I mean, he's. I asked him if he would come and be part of the Q&A, question and answer at the end of each showing of the movie, which is kind of fun to, you know, to meet people and answer their questions right. about BAI. And he said, I cannot speak in front of people. I can't. And I tried to convince him, and he said, well, maybe, but let me tell you a story about how bad it gets for me. And I said, well, he said, well, I've been doing a radio program, and this was in sometime in the late 60s or 70s, and I was invited to come to some college with Paul Krasner and Marshall Efron to talk to the, you know, assembled students. And I went, and Paul spoke, and Paul was sweet and warm and charming and funny, and Marshall spoke, and he was hilarious, people rolling on the floor, and all the time Steve said he was sitting there and sweating the flop sweat that you sweat when you feel you're not going to be able to speak, and you got to get it up together, and he thought he had something wonderful that he was going to say, and just as he was getting up onto the platform to speak, somebody handed him a note, and as he was climbing up, he looked at it, and it said, "You're boring." Oh, so he did it. He didn't remember what he was going to say. He just stuck the note in his pocket and said, "Thank you very much for your attention. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Goodbye." That was the extent of his appearance. And then a year later, he took the jacket down to have it cleaned, and he pulled the note out of the pocket to look at it. And it said, "You're invited to a party." He had seen words that weren't there, unless they were written in disappearing ink or something. But it was, you know, it was a tough moment for him. You know, sometimes the mind plays tricks on you. Well, you know that the movie opened on International Speak Like a Pirate Day?
And really? I
forgot all about it, yes. On Julius Lester's wonderful calendar, there is a notification that there is an International Speak Like a Pirate Day. I don't know.
Well, I saw a picture online of Obama with a pirate. Was that for International? It was him, you know, doing the photo ops, like the handshake, and it was him and a pirate. I don't know. I thought it might have been doctored or something, but apparently maybe it was part of Speak Like a Pirate.
Arg.
Could be, you know. I'm sure that there are people who are as dedicated to speaking like a pirate as the chief is to speaking like he were a chief. So should we answer a call or two more?
Well, sure. We're stuck with these phones as is. I have to report.
I'm afraid. I must apologize. If you want to complain, call Grayson Challenger, our chief engineer, and ask him. You're on the radio.
Well, I just want to thank both Paul and Jessica for doing such a phenomenal job of synthesizing these archives, and even more than that, for you, Bob, giving them something to synthesize. And it was just a yeoman's job, yeoman's work.
Thank you very much.
And you deserve every accolade you can get. And Los Angeles, San Francisco, Oakland, Berkeley, Portland, Seattle. This should open wider than, well, I want to stop. I don't want to sound like Howard Stern, but it should open as wide as it can because the picture deserves it. Bob deserves it. And
well,
you guys
deserve it. If this is who I think it is, you worked for Howard Stern.
Well, that's why I said it, but I can't help it. I have a problem.
But then you also worked for me.
I did. I can't help that either.
And now you're a lawyer.
I can't help that idea. But what I can help is that you all did, you know, such a great job, and I couldn't go to bed without saying that.
Well, thanks a lot.
Because I have two kids. You only have one. But you did an incredible, incredible job, and I couldn't be happier for you both. And last night was probably one of the greatest nights of my life without putting too fine a point on it.
Wow. Thank you, Andrew. Thanks.
And just keep doing it, and great things are going to come of this for everyone. I said to Jessica last night, where were you 20 years ago? It's not, you know, and Paul, it's not your fault. It's probably mine, but I'll tell you, you guys did an absolutely bang-up job, all of you.
Well, where were you 20 years
you.
Ago? Thank you. Where were you?
If I only knew, I was I was in high school.
Uh-huh. And where was Jessica 20 years ago? She was
in high school, too.
No?
Before
she went to Africa.
Yeah, it was pre-Africa. But that's really, we really appreciate that.
Well, it's good stuff, guys. I'm going to hang up on other people, even though, it's a collective effort here. But keep going.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
You're on the radio. Hi, good morning. Hello? Yes.
Bob?
Yes, you're on the radio.
Hi, Bob. Let me turn the radio down. Wait, let me just close this and it'll turn it down. Yeah, hi, Bob.
Hi.
It's Nancy.
It's Nancy Allen.
Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Bob. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Nancy.
Hi. I just called because I just wanted to say, since I saw it for the second time last night, and really trying to look at it objectively, you get a lot more out of it when you see it the second time, because there are so many levels to it. There's so much in it that you don't get it all the first time. You can't. So everybody has to go see it more than once, like you said earlier.
Well, that's what the distributor wants to hear.
No, thanks, Nancy. And also, you contributed to the film, and not just by being in it, but your handwriting on the tape boxes, and
that's right.
And you know, it's you definitely played a role in this as well.
For years and years, Nancy Allen was the chief audio engineer for Radio Unnameable and for many other people. She did programs for Ram Dass, and she did programs for Paul Gorman, and Liza Cowan was Liza Cowan's engineer, and
it all still sounds crystal clear.
Yeah.
Yes, beautiful work.
And there's so much work that got uncovered that we haven't even gotten to hear yet. There's another treasure trove within that. There's probably several times what we did get to see. So it's putting more of it available and on the radar, at least, for anybody, and historians, or you name it.
One other thing I should say about Nancy, or two other things I should say about her, is that after 1977, when things went awry here at WBAI, Nancy could not find employment as an engineer because, probably because, despite her incredible competence, she's a woman. And there weren't that many jobs for women engineers. So Nancy, you know, examined her life, tried to figure out what she liked doing, and she went to veterinary school, Cornell Veterinary School, the best in the country. And she's now a great veterinarian.
Thank you.
And if you have a problem with an animal, Nancy will probably, tell you what to do for nothing.
Yeah. Well. Don't worry, my wife.
Anyway, Nancy, it's great to talk to you. Thank you, and it was good
seeing you.
Thanks, Nancy. It was great to see you last night.
Thanks.
Bye, Nancy. All right, you take care.
You too.
Bye.
Bye. Hi, you're on the radio.
Hello.
Good morning.
Hi. Hi. Pirates talk like bankers. That's the way they talk.
Pirates are bankers. Is this Paul?
No, this is George out here in Michigan.
George in Lake Michigan.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I can't imagine that you could have possibly been at the screening last night, but I think you better.
You better
cross the Great Lakes and come down to New York City and see it this week. Of course, it might.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it. It's going to be a beautiful thing. And the fellow just before you, man, he said it. You know, how much of a important documentary of, you know, that time in America. You know, and that time in the world. And it's like a very clear and true vision of what is, what it was then, you know. But anyway, so I just wanted to wish you all the best. And,
Thank you.
And I think you guys are, you know, this is the world changing right before your eyes. This is instant better world, instant nicer planet, just like a decision to be a nicer people, nicer.
Could be that, you know. But it could happen, you know. All it would take is for Rami to say, "Oh my God, I've been having a bad dream. Somebody must have dosed me. I maybe it was bath salts, maybe it was that tequila I had with wait a minute, just a second. I said that people aren't important. I said eliminate medic. I said eliminate social. Oh my God, what was I thinking?"
Exactly. A change of heart.
Right.
The world needs a gigantic change of heart.
Wow, that'd be a good bumper sticker. What do you think?
I think we have to do it. There's no choice. There's no choice at all. You know, either we're gonna let the place go down in flames or put out the bloody fire. And the fire has to be put out, right? Bloody heck, now.
That's right.
And then we can enjoy life.
Well, we have to continue to enjoy life, even as crappy as they're making it. You know?
No, I meant like the whole planet.
Enjoy
like,
the precious, seize the precious stuff. Moments as they come speeding by. Grab the rings from the merry-go-round. Anyway, thank you very much.
Okay.
Bye.
Bless you
thank
all.
You.
Bless America. Bless the world. Bless everything.
Bless Mommy and Daddy. You're on the radio. Here. Hello. Whoops. You're on the radio. Hello?
Yes, it's Cloudy.
Cloudy, good morning.
So, I missed your party last night. You did run into Andrew Hoffman there, didn't you?
Sure I did. It was wonderful to see him. I wouldn't be surprised if he were listening now. He might call in.
maybe you should call in. Well,
I don't like to say should, Cloudy, about another person. I just, you know, it takes away their volition, you know?
Maybe he'd like to call in.
Shoulds and oughts. Some people feel that those are bad.
What's that?
Some people feel that shoulds and oughts are bad.
Well, I think they're worth watching anyway.
You shouldn't say shouldn't. Just like
what a contradictory koan you've invented. You shouldn't say shouldn't. Very good, very good.
What's the race from Tahiti?
What's going on in your life, Cloudy?
I was in New York for a short time. I had to come back early yesterday. During the day, I had to come back yesterday. Next week I'm having a new cap put on one of my teeth.
God, everyone's having dental problems now. I wonder if it had something to do with policemen's clubs. Were you ever hit by a policeman?
I've never been clubbed in the mouth by a cop.
Well, that's good, but you do grit your teeth when they hit you in other parts of your body, right?
That's right, gritting your teeth from stress.
Right.
Bruxism.
Have you been down to Occupy, the different...
Yeah, I was down there. It wasn't too impressive. I was there September 15th at Union Square for a few hours. It didn't seem to be very much happening. I just had one of these meetings with people shouting. I guess they've made that into a custom. The 17th I came around, I didn't like all the horses.
Yeah, there is a kind of cop talk, you know. There's a way that they talk to people, you know. It's like, it's you know, shouting itself is a form of coercion, you know.
Well, what strikes
me, I think maybe they teach them that in school, and they say after you've shouted, it's okay to throw someone down on the ground. You know, if they haven't obeyed your shout, then you can throw someone on the ground and kneel on their neck.
I was really shocked. There's enormous numbers of cops, not even right where the protests were, but just around the whole southern part of Manhattan. It cost a fortune during a time of austerity. And when I don't think...
Yeah, Bloomberg doesn't fund his private army himself, does he? He called it his private army. Police
right. They during times of austerity, I noticed this also when I was in Pittsburgh for the NATO thing in 2009. I mean, the cost of all these ninja dressed up cops, they were like an army in Pittsburgh. It must be fabulous. I mean, I guess they're used to wasting all kinds of money in war, so doesn't seem that striking, but it's very striking.
Yeah, you know, now it's hard to hear your end of the call. You know?
There's just an awful lot of money to spend on huge armies of cops.
Well, Bloomberg is very rich. He made one of those lists, the top of one of those lists this week. The richest mayors or richest politicians or richest... protoplasm, I don't know. I know how he got rich. I just found out today, and it's the reason that he doesn't live in Gracie Mansion. They've been fracking the little land around Gracie Mansion, and they've been piling up the bucks and the oil. So he's making it as mayor. Nobody ever who was elected for office in this country, I don't know, since colonial days, there wasn't anyone who they had to raise a subscription to bury. You know, no one ever had to have a fund drive to bury a politician, with the exception, I think, of General Grant, you know. Because people thought he was responsible for destroying slavery. So they had to, so he was impoverished toward the end. But
his administration was corrupt.
Well, they said it was corrupt, but you know, it was just people taking money.
Right.
You know, it's that's the American way, isn't it?
Right.
All right, thanks, Grady, for calling. Bye.
All right.
Bye. You're on the radio.
Yeah, I wanted to say I think Romney was wrong because he said 47% of people being dependent on the government. I think we should really work hard to get everyone dependent on the government. Like, really be better off if we have maybe 90% of people on food stamps and on welfare. Don't you think we should try to get more people dependent on government programs?
Yeah, you have to, before you do that, you have to enrich the program and make it a little bit more livable than it is.
Right. But then, but if we enrich the programs, then it would be better if we got like maybe 90 or 95% of Americans.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because that would make America a lot stronger, right? Having everyone dependent on these things.
Right. If you know, if, I mean, it's so simple. If we had free education in this country, right? What country would be able to compete with us? If that's your analysis of what the world is about.
I think people should have free cars too, free cars if they need to get places.
Well, they would have to be hybrids at least.
Green.
Yeah, they'd have to be a lot greener than they are now.
Yeah.
Also, pets. Like if people need cats and dogs, the government
free pets,
plenty of those.
Free dogs. Pets.
Yeah, well, there's plenty of cats and dogs to go around.
And mice.
Yeah, I think also, like, the government should just give people everything. Like, people shouldn't really be able to make choices for themselves because they're not smart enough.
Well, I don't know. I don't know about choices. People should be allowed to make as many choices as they want.
Well, but not about, like, how they live their life. I mean, we want the government telling us. It's up to the government to tell us, right? Because we trust them.
No, I think you radical people go too far.
Oh,
I don't want to see that happen. I want people to tell the government what to do.
Oh, but you just want You just want everyone dependent on the government program.
Dependent is such a loaded word. You got to be someone like Romney to use a word like dependent that way. What people should be sustained by the government. They should be supported by the government. Why should people support the government if the government doesn't support the people?
Can I ask you one last question? Ronald Reagan once said that the greatest social program is a job. What do you think of that statement?
Well, I would say the greatest social program is work. But about a job, I don't know. A job usually turns out to be alienated and a drag that you have to get up to and force yourself to do and, you know, force yourself to... Like, forget how much you're alienated. I mean, it's in. Go to see the movie Brazil, and you'll see exactly what I mean.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Bye now. You're on the radio.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All the Cuba belong to a bunch of communists.
What's that? Oh, you sounds like you're tired. You've been up talking to the press, huh? Are you like a follower of those people who called McDonough, or are you an initial innovator?
I think he hung up.
I think he's hung up.
Could have been.
Hey, it's almost 1 o'clock in the morning. This is WBAI in New York City, and you're also listening to WFTE in Scranton and Mount Cobb, Pennsylvania. So keep listening.
And all over the globe.
And if you want to call us and be part of this interesting collection of people complimenting Paul Lovelace and Jessica Wolfson on how they managed to extract 90 interesting minutes from my dismal life. This is
or
the place
compliment to compliment Bob Fass on.
That's right.
209-2900.
Movies are a great time machine, I just realized. You can compress a life into a smaller and smaller amount of time with just as much riches to draw out.
Yeah. You're on the radio.
Bob.
That's me. Who's this?
Who's you guy?
Hello.
You guy from Jersey City.
How do you do? Good morning.
Listen, Bob. The Denver Broncos quarterback, he was playing with...
Listen, I'm not...
I had, team. I don't
know too much...
Indianapolis Colts.
I don't know too much about sports. I really would...
No, listen to this.
I would prefer...
He went to Europe for a stem cell operation on his shoulder.
Okay.
And there are pets in America who are being denied stem cell treatment for their hips. Dogs.
Well, maybe
this
the
is
dogs.
A big scandal.
Maybe the dogs don't have big bank accounts. You think that could be?
This is a scandal. What else are
you saying? Well, I think you should call Howard Stern and tell him about it.
Players have a high monetary value. Dogs don't.
You're on the air. You're on the radio.
Hey, Bob. How are you?
Okay. Who's this?
It's John in Queens.
Hey, John. How you doing?
The funniest moment last night came when during the Q&A, when it was about halfway through, somebody in the audience asked a question, and the wireless microphone that you were holding was on your lap. You started answering the question, and Paul nudged you, you know, to remind you to. Speaking of the microphone, your comment was, boy, I really need to learn how to talk into a microphone.
Right.
It was a wonderful night. And,
thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Congrats to Paul and Jessica for finally getting it on the screen, and I loved it. I especially enjoyed seeing Bill and Fred, you know, two current contributors who are so important to the show, and I especially like those two moments.
Well,
that makes two or three of us.
I think you're right. Ones. I think you're right. They're great moments, and thanks for the ups.
Thank you. Good night.
It's a full board. By golly,
you're on the radio. Good morning. Good
morning, Bob.
Good morning.
Hey, guys. You know, I think sometimes trivialization is a bigger assault on the sensibilities and overt insult. You know, the guys that call up with the go back to Cuba thing. I'm a longtime supporter and listener of BAI. I am New York City born of Cuban parents. And I have been troubled by this because, you know, it presents this sort of binary notion of it's sort of for or against Cuba. I am, for the most part, with you guys on your views of Cuba, but I think what the problem is, these guys call up and they utter these mindless things.
Right, and they call in the middle of some serious moment.
Exactly.
And they try to distract and make it into a
they
joke.
They
bother me too. one of them is the guy who used to call and say to me and to other people, "You're a commie nudie." You know, it's
which is mean it's an airheaded epithet which has no basis in anything. And what it does is, you know, there are many Cuban people that have a spectrum of views that are more along the gray, you know, tonality. And it's not, there's this caricature of it, you know, for us or Guinness, you know, like a Republican notion.
Do you know Irwin Corey, Professor?
Sure, of course I do. Professor, of course.
You know what he has been doing? Actually, he's in the hospital now, but he's getting out soon.
Okay, good to hear that.
He's this ancient guy in his hundreds.
Yeah.
And he walks up to cars that are stopped in traffic with a paper cup.
Right.
He doesn't say who he is. I mean, he's a nationally known movie star and television figure. He doesn't say who he is. He just goes up to a car, puts the paper cup near the window, and says, "A tribute to a hospital in Cuba, their children." And he collects money. He collects right. hundreds of dollars for hospitals in Cuba, in the street near where he lives. Oh. He's a,
and he goes there.
Yeah. And, I mean, he has some kind of an infection now that it's being... It's being taken care of. His white cell count was up, and they...
He's okay?
Well, he's going to be okay. He's not completely okay, but he's in the hospital, and he's convulsing the nurses, I guess, making them...
I wish you the best. Let me say one more thing, Bob.
Sure.
I think what happens here is, you know, this creates an atmosphere, as I said, of sort of like ideologic caricature where... There's no room created for discussion for people who have views that are nuanced and complex, and because it becomes, you know, one extreme versus the other. And I consider myself a creature of the left, but that doesn't mean I'm a total fan of the system as it manifests there in Cuba now. There are things right. that I could want to correct and make better. And that conversation is very hard to have anywhere.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure, sir.
There was a piece in the New Yorker a few weeks ago about someone named Morgan, who was an American, I guess he was a ranger, someone who had been trained in the psychological warfare school and had been trained as, you know, as a paratrooper and all of the other things that go into being a modern, unconventional warrior. And when the Cuban Revolution started, he went down there and joined up. He traveled, you know, through the mountains until he found Castro. And at first they thought that he was, you know, a CIA plant. And then as he began to teach people how to handle their equipment and began to, you know, lead, you know, very heroic existence on the battlefield, they came to trust him more and more, and he became very friendly with Castro, with Raul Castro, with Che Guevara, and with and many of the other leaders. He married a Cuban woman, and who was also a fighter, and they would fight together against Batista's forces, and then they won. And something happened, and he was arrested with a lot of other people who had been close to Castro. And there's a whole story about him in the New Yorker. And
arrested by whom?
Castro.
Okay.
Castro. And not only was he executed, but the story is that he was executed very brutally. And he... I wasn't there. I didn't see it happening, but they said that he, you know, refused a blindfold. He said he wanted to see the people who right. shot him. He was one of those people who died right. saying "Viva Cuba." He said, "Go ahead, I dare you to fight me." And they said, "Kneel down and beg for your life," and he refused. He said, "I won't do that." And someone shot him in one knee, and the knee buckled, and he still stood there trying to stand. And then they shot him in the other knee, and then they shot him in the head, and they shot him in the head again and again and again. And then they arrested his wife. And
is this someone who presumably was in ideologically in sync with Castro?
He seemed to be.
Yeah.
But why did they execute him?
Why did they do this? What do you think?
Well, I wasn't there. I don't know. They accused him of being an right. agent of the United
well,
States.
Well, you see, maybe that's part of the culture of surveillance that's there, that sometimes, you know, to save your own hide, you're going to say so-and-so did so-and-so, and then, you know, whether it's true or not, and sometimes that's the problem when you live in a...
totalitarian state.
In society that, you know, I mean,
you don't like that. You don't like that word. I don't either. You know, but because the Cuban, because the Cuban Revolution is one of the most beneficent in the history of the world, I think.
Sure, but
the one thing that I knew for sure is that Castro made sure that in a starving population, every child had access to milk.
Right.
You know, and one, it's so interesting. One of the things they said about people who were, you know, day trippers for the revolution was that they were come vacos.
What did you say?
Come vacos. I may have gotten the word wrong. But they're people
cow eaters?
Yeah, it's people who would eat the cow rather than milk the cow.
Instead of the more efficient way of not killing the animal, just using the milk.
Right.
Once you kill it, there's no more milk.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But here's the thing, Bobby. I'm so glad you're talking about this. And forgive me for going on here, but I think this is important stuff to get into. That these are conversations that need to be had, because there are people who will argue that maybe Fidel had assumed a certain level of ruthlessness because he had so many people from the outside who wanted to, topple him. And that's
right. I mean, that's one of the explanations for what happened to the Soviet Revolution.
Sure.
That because it was so surrounded by enemies, people who were trying to subvert the revolution, people who were trying to support the corrupt czarists, right. that it turned into a very besieged state.
Right.
You know the poem, the poet Bertolt Brecht.
Of course, yeah.
You know him?
Great playwright, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He has a poem to the children of the future. When you see our faces in these frozen, this is not the poem, it's just my paraphrase of it.
Right.
Frozen in these angry masks, please understand that the times we lived in demanded it so that we could make a time when angry masks and brutality was not necessary. I don't know. I mean, he says it much more convincingly than I did, but maybe somebody even knows the poem and can call us and read it tonight. But anyway, thank you very much. What's your name, friend?
My name is Austin. Can I say one more quick thing?
Sure.
Very important.
Two more quick things and a slow thing, if you want.
My father's name was Blas, B-L-A-S. His last name was Gil, G-I-L. My first name is Austin.
Really?
I've never put this out there, but I want to put this out there now because I want to see if anybody knows anything. My father was a homicide victim on the night of the blackout, July 13th, 1977. And there is no record of this. You can go up and Google Blas, B-L-A-S, Gil, G-I-L, and there's no, I have the death certificate, and of course I know that he died, and the presumptive notion is that he was held up and killed, and I don't know at this point if there was some kind of political hit, because my father was a Castro supporter to the end. My mother was on the opposite side of the political spectrum, so you can imagine what that was like for me.
Was this in New York City?
This was in New York City.
I remember that night.
He had a laundromat on 204th Avenue between 20th and 21st, and he had a dry cleaners on 25th and 8th Avenue. And he used to frequent Casa de las Americas on 14th Street when he used to be there. And he was a big supporter. I have a picture of him with Fidel Castro at the old Palladium raising money just prior to the revolution. He was shot in the head on the night of July 13, 1977. He died in St. Vincent's Hospital 3 days later on the 16th, which was a Saturday. And there's nothing on Google about this. It's almost as if I've always wondered if there was some kind, if this was the right-wing Cubans that got to him, or if this was people in the American government, or, you know, if this was, because at the end, the guy got acquitted. The guy who supposedly shot him was acquitted. So I don't know what the story is. This is one big mystery. And I wanted to come forward with this. I said, "Well, why not? Why not let me rip with this right now?"
Well, how can you investigate that?
Well, people out there might have, you know, ideas that, or know people that, you know, can tell. I mean, at the end of the day, on some level, it's academic. He's gone, you know. But I don't know if this was just he used to walk around with a lot of money on his person. And the story is that he was shot with his own .38 Smith & Wesson, and that's what happened. He had, I guess, wrestled away from him somewhere, I guess, around 17th Street and 8th Avenue.
In Manhattan?
In Manhattan, right. So I guess the blackout was around 9-ish or so, wasn't it?
Right, 9:30. I saw the lights go out.
And I guess he would have been walking towards 14th Street. We lived in Washington Heights at the time, and he was held up and shot. One bullet to the head, never regained consciousness. As I said, died 3 days later in the now defunct St. Vincent's Hospital. So I don't know what the narrative is. I don't know what happened here, and, you know, it's a mystery.
I think what you may need is an investigator to go back to that precinct and subpoena those precinct records from that night,
you know,
try to find it from there.
I've spoken to a couple of people who've written, there are about two or three books out there on the blackout 77, and it's as if there's no notion of being any homicide, which is interesting because as much
How old were you when this happened?
This was 77. I was just shy of 21. I'm 56 now. Okay, I was born in 56.
21.
So I have, and by the way, I had a very tortured relationship with him. So that's a whole other story.
You're not a person of interest in this, are you?
What does that mean, Bob?
No, I don't.
No interest. I mean, I'm interested in finding out what may have happened. I have no notion of what if this was a cover up for something. The presumptive notion of why of how he died, or what? Because, as I said, you know, he was a Castro supporter to the end. So I can only I think there were people who visited our house when he was, you know, a person involved in those activities here in New York. He came to New York in 1947. So, you know, there's a long trajectory of things here.
Well, the only thing that, you know, occurs to me at that time was sometime in 1977. After we had our little problems here at WBAI, there was a benefit thrown at Town Hall for the people who were, fired from the station.
Right.
Myself, Dolores Costello, a bunch of other people. And Norman Seaman, who was a booker at Town Hall, had arranged for us to have the town hall free for that night. And on the way to the event, I think, or a day or two after it, someone smacked into his car, and when he got out to look at it, someone took a shot at him. And then, the police came and everything was just like somehow smooth.
What was the date of this? When was this?
I don't remember, but it was sometime in 1977.
And the 13th, in fact, I was at a meeting outdoors in Central Park with the Friends of WBAI on that day, and there was a lot of electricity in the air. It was hot and humid, moist, and even after the lights blew, it was still thundering and lightning with no rain. It was a very sultry night.
Do you guys know of any rumors of anybody having lost their life in the blackout that day? Do you know?
Well, there seemed to be what was termed rioting in many of the boroughs, but Manhattan, I went up and down the next afternoon from downtown to up or vice versa, and it seemed like the only stores that were hit were health food stores for some reason. Everything else did not see, I didn't see any kind of wide-scale destruction, at least
right,
the property I saw.
In proportion to the rioting, it always seems strange that there wasn't, the presumptive notion is that there wasn't a single homicide, and yet, I know that there was one, and it may be something so banal as the fact that, you know, New York didn't want to, say, tarnish its image, so they didn't want to register that, okay, we had a little rioting, but hey, you know, no one lost their life. So, you know, again, I'm open to all possibilities. I don't know what happened. So, you know, I'm going to bow out here.
Listen, I thank you for calling. This is a very interesting little sidebar tonight.
Okay, thanks so much. Good night.
Call us again, will you?
I will do that. Thank you so much. Good night. Bye-bye.
You're on the radio. Good morning. Hello.
Hello, Bob.
Good morning.
Yeah, I noticed on the internet there's a book called The Victims. This is Jacob from Williamsburg. I noticed there's a
book called The Victims of Josephson?
No, The Victims of Che Guevara.
Oh, I'm sure there are.
It really gives a big negative spin on him. I noticed also there's a photograph of him, not the common one that we see on the T-shirts with the beret, but he's like stretched out, dead on a stretcher after he was assassinated.
No, well, yes, that's what happened to him. He was he was in Bolivia.
Yeah.
And in Bolivia, he was organizing Campesinos.
And by the way, his granddaughter was interviewed on BBC last night.
Well, I tell you, like full disclosure, I got a call from Larry Lunin, who was the director of a play that I did when I was away from WBAI, where I was, exiled from WBAI in 77, 78, 79, 80, and so on, up till 83. And the play was called Macroon's Guevara. A guy named Macroon, who was a Scotch-Irish painter and artist,
wasn't related,
but he had this idea about the heroism of Che Guevara and his adventures in Bolivia, and he decorated the scenes of the walls of his little hovel of an apartment with these exquisite drawings of Che Guevara's Bolivian campaign.
Did he have any other work? So that was
basically the guy, when the play opens, the guy is dead. Macroon is dead. You find out about him in a flashback or two. And I played Macroon. You know, I'm good at ghosts. Ooh. So, and the museum has become a candidate for like being a national monument because of the art that is on the walls, but the art is like barely discernible. You can hardly see it. You really have to squint to see it. And that's what the play is about. And in the play, the ghosts of his compadres come and talk about how they died, and it was kind of interesting.
You see it through three different eyes, don't you?
A lot of people don't realize that Castro was indirectly responsible for Las Vegas. I guess you realize that.
right.
He threw Meyer Lansky out and said, let's go make Las Vegas.
Well, Castro, one of the things that Castro and Cubans were so incensed about was that while they were starving, literally starving, and being brutalized by Batista's thugs, the rest of the world viewed Cuba as a kind of a gaming house and whorehouse.
Yeah, that's what it was, yeah.
And Castro, whatever else you say about him, has turned Cuba into a kind of one of the best medical facilities in the world. People come to Cuba from all over the world to get cured and to heal.
The best health care.
The best health care in the world, you know, and in this impoverished population. You know, Cuba is a marvel, and like most of the marvels of the 20th century, it has some serious flaws. Look at the treatment of people who are a little different or whose gender is different from what one would expect it to be. They're although they're that's supposed to be easing up, what happens is that they are re-educated, you know, and that's ridiculous.
Now, my grandfather's brother had some very strong business ties with pre-Castro Cuba. He had a cigar factory in Tampa. It was all Cuban tobacco, in the 40s and 50s.
Mm. That's what I was going to ask. What about the growing of cigar tobacco? I mean, it can't be good for you. Yet it's a mainstay of the economy.
I have this theory. It's only a theory that tobacco, the Indian weed, which was medicine for the people who lived in this continent before Sir Walter Raleigh, tobacco is not as poisonous as modern tobacco, which is...
No, the modern tobacco is filled with all kinds of additives.
Right, and a good Cuban cigar, which I've had a couple of times in my life, is really an exquisite experience.
Yeah, so you don't have so much, like one or two puffs, and that's about it.
Yeah, right. But the flavor and the I don't know about the head. There are heads that I prefer much more to tobacco, but yeah. It's a great experience. I don't like to get drunk either, but brandy is really an interesting thing. You know, I like a little amaretto once in a while, right. but. You know, there are better things for getting the dopamine to fly around in your body. Yeah. Anyway, thanks very much for the call.
All right. Bye.
Take care. And you're on the radio. Good morning.
Hello?
Hello. Good morning.
Bob?
It's me. Turn your radio down, please.
Just a moment.
Hello?
Hi, boss.
Oh, it's Wavy Gravy.
You have gravy in your ear, perhaps a Q-tip.
Wow, hey. Wavy.
Wavy Gravy.
Wow, Wavy is making a reference to my description of him when he came back from India. I said, you look like a man made out of Q-tips. You had been...
Those were the days of my blue foam coming out the butt.
Of your what?
Back? Blue foam. Excreting blue foam. I had diarrhea beyond belief, which you can acquire there. It's a great weight loss mechanism.
Right. And you were very, very sick, but you did. Yes. I must say you recovered under my roof.
For years, people said I had no middle. And now, believe me, I've grown one. Bob, I saw the movie. It's wonderful.
Thank you, Wavy. Thank you. So is your movie wonderful. Yeah. Yours is called Saint Misbehavin'.
We could be a double bill, Bob.
Oh. All right. Yeah. Too much. I think I'd rather be with a Mickey Mouse than, you know, your movie can stand on its own, Wavy. I mean, maybe part of a 60s festival, but I don't know. Maybe it's a good idea after all.
I used to see two movies, a cartoon, a travelogue, and don't forget the previews. That's when I was, and it used to cost like, was it a buck? A buck, I think. Were the days, my
right,
friend.
But you went to the Neighborhood Playhouse School of the Theater.
And Bob, so did you. I just discovered your movie.
And you probably went across town to the Thalia and sat there for hours and hours watching great movies.
I used to go to the St. Mark's movie theater and the Waverly. And, of course, to 42nd Street. We didn't leave class at the Playhouse and go to a cinema in the uptowns.
Well, the actually, the Playhouse was on 54th Street, and 42nd Street was where you could see all the... Although the yes. Thalia was in the 80s. You're right. It wasn't so far uptown. But anyway, I had a great movie education sitting in those broken seats at the old Thalia. And I really developed a tremendous love for the flickering lights on the screen. And I have yet to see your movie in a theater, Wavy.
Oh, you must see it in a theater. Yeah. But the thing is, with the DVD, it comes with a whole other hour called DVD Extras.
Oh,
wow!
And I don't think yours has yours doesn't have extras yet.
Eventually, it will.
Ooh, like what? What's in the extras? Make me hungry.
Oh well, there's
surprises.
There's lots of goodies.
There's again, you can only have 90 minutes of extras, so there are lots.
Is that the limit? Kurt Vonnegut once said, "History is a list of surprises."
Yeah, it's true. That's right. Predicting is what the rabbis say is that. Predictions after a certain point in history when the temple was destroyed, predictions are in the hands of idiots.
Predictors before wieners?
So how's camp, Wavy?
Well, we survived camp, and it turned out really good. The film helped draw more kids. And we had two very difficult years previously. In fact, it was feeling a little scary. And then adult camp did pretty well. You know, we do 9 weeks for kids, but we do 1 week for grown-ups. It's never too late to have a happy childhood. And adult camp is amazing. Actually, it's kind of just like kids camp, except you don't have to brush your teeth.
I should say.
And you can procreate if you're not too loud about it.
I should say that the scenes in Camp Winter Rainbow in your movie are really very inspiring. You see these kids learning how to do tightrope walking. Learning how to be clowns.
It's amazing.
It's a circus camp.
Circus and performing arts. Our dance department is everything from West African to hip-hop, and our theater department goes from improv to Shakespeare and the circus skills, which give you timing and balance, which is a wonderful thing to teach a child. We're not trying to create little circus stars or movie stars, although it has happened. But what we are doing is creating a universal human beings that can deal with anything that comes down the pike with humor and compassion. And that's basically it.
Well, that's the way you deal with things, Wavy. I remember you protesting, this particular thing. Was this in the Pentagon when you somehow invaded the Pentagon in your clown suit or your rabbit suit?
No, am I imagining it was the Lawrence Livermore Weapons Laboratory.
Right.
Another
secure facility. I'm thinking of the time when
I was dressed as a bunny, Bob, and I had a human foot for luck. Truly, a nice big human foot, and finally I was about to go into the weapons lab when they said, "Bust that bunny," and it was then that I whipped out my get out of jail free card, which has to be laminated to impress the police. I don't know what there is about lamination, but it gets their attention big time. So you there at home in the audience, if you have a Monopoly, take your get out of jail free card, laminate it and just stick it in your wallet just in case, especially if you get pulled over for something minor, and whip it out. And it causes the police to actually smile and perhaps cut you loose.
It actually did
me
that
on several occasions.
I didn't laminate it, though. That was my mistake.
Oh, it didn't work for you.
No, I didn't laminate it. I will do that.
Lamination is the secret. Otherwise, it is a waste of a jail-free card.
Well, I tell you, once I had an experience without that card that really, made me believe that it was something like that was possible.
What happened?
I was double parked in my car, waiting for someone to come down from their apartment with some CDs that I wanted to play on the air. And I was waiting, and a bus honked behind me, and I went around the block. It was a very narrow street. I went around the block, and I came back. And when I came back and tried to pull in there, there was a police. And he said, "Let me see your license and registration." And so I said, "Well, we're just waiting for some CDs to go." He said, "Let me see your license. Oh, how old are you?" And I said, "Well, you can see on my card, I guess I was 75 then." And he said, "Oh, go ahead. I don't stop anyone older than 70.
Oh, geezer power.
Yay. Yay. That's
I'm 76, just like the trombones.
So, how are your bones, Wavy? How's your arthritis?
I seem to be chugging along. I mean, yeah. I stupidly broke my leg on St. Patrick's Day after I had just gotten over my sixth back surgery. And I slipped on a piece of wet flagstone and, had a boot, and then an air cast, and now I'm back at it. So, but I had to, go through the entire summer with short people very tenderly because of my, but I had this beautiful, beautiful golf cart, which the Camp Winter Rainbow Art Department had totally psychedelicized. It is the golf cart to defy all golf carts. I call it the Road Hug after the Road Hog, which was our original bus that we toured the free world in.
Well, you did some great things when you were touring the free world.
And we got to drive two buses from London to the Himalayas, which is so beautifully illustrated in the St. Misbehavin movie. I mean, Bob, we're so fortunate to have these films to refresh our memory of our life when we enter into total geezerhood and would normally drift away to the total zen outlook of just eternity now. But now we have these films to remind us of who we were in the ancient times and beyond.
Well,
wonderful.
Wherever you still are, whatever you were, you're really, you may not be quite as agile a wire walker as you were when you were younger, but you're as funny when you want to be funny, and you're as deep as you I admire you tremendously. I admire that your creation of SEVA, which was a service organization that prevented
blindness. We are still in 35 years.
35 years of SEVA.
Yep.
Well, Wavy, savor life and thrive.
And Bob, I got to tell you, we have recently gone into a bit of a partnership with which stands for tomorrow.
They
pass out free shoes. You know about that, yes?
It's called Toe.
Tom's.
Tom's.
Tom Tomorrow?
Tom Tomorrow.
Not Tom's of Maine. Tom's, period. And
like Tom McCann?
No, no, Tom's of Tom.
I'm sure you know.
What they do, Bob, for every pair of shoes they sell, they give away a pair in the third world.
Wow.
Oh.
And now they've been very successful. They've given over 3 million pairs of shoes. So now they've also gone into doing sunglasses. And for every pair of Tom's sunglasses they sell, Seva gets to do a cataract surgery in the third world. So my task has been at shows to get the artists to put on a pair of Tom's sunglasses and let me take their picture, and then they put it up on their Facebook. They don't, they only advertise on social media. But I've never been turned down by any artist. My greatest coup was getting sunglasses on the Blind Boys of Alabama.
Oh.
You had to be there. It was hilarious.
You had to touch coup?
No. I got the Blind Boys of Alabama to put on Tom's sunglasses.
Oh.
And we took their picture.
Well, the Native Americans say touch coup.
I know what that is.
Means, well, tell about it.
And Seva, our other thing that
I'll
we do, aside from blindness, is Native American health care.
Well, Seva's a great organization, and you're a great clown, Wavy.
Well, thanks, Bob.
And thank you for calling. And are you going to be around this part of the country?
Only time will tell. I have no idea. We may be going to Philadelphia, yes, to visit. I'm soon to be a grandfather again, and this time with the female variety. And so we're planning maybe in December sometime going to Philadelphia.
So
I'll be close.
Well, I hope you stick around, Wavy, and we continue to have these conversations for the next 100 years.
You too, Bob. Keep on breathing.
Oh, wait, regards from Andrew Hoffman, who... He showed up last night at the showing at the Film Forum where the Radio Enable movie is playing. And
wonderful.
Who distributes your film, Wavy?
Well, that's a good question. Ripple Effect Films.
Ripple Effect.
Ripple Effect Films is Michelle's organization. And she's begun making a film about this guy from Saturday Night Live, whose name escaped. Who? We can't think of it right now. We're having a senior moment, but
who is that?
She's always happy, and Penny Baker is up getting a honorary Oscar, we think.
Yeah, and he produced your film.
Yes. Yes, he sure did, and he's amazing.
Well, so
amazing. He's older than either of us.
So are you, Wavy. I'm happy that this film is being distributed by Kino Lorber. Which is...
Yes, I saw that.
Great.
Who's that?
Oh, it's people, you know, who, if you don't know their names, they're people, Wavy. They all, they have names, and they work very hard at selecting great films. They have 200 films in their catalog. Among them, just two. Have you ever heard of something called Five Broken Cameras? That's one of them.
No, but it sounds like a bland.
Oh, it's a great film.
And, I'll check it out.
And then there's another one called Meet the Fockers.
Meet the Falcons.
Yes, I know about that.
The Falcons.
You know about this one? The two women who...
twins. The one I'm thinking is
two
Robert
twins
De
Niro. Who are prostitutes in Amsterdam in their 80s.
Oh my God!
It's quite a film, wonderful, and I fit right in.
Yes, you'd be real big in Amsterdam, Bob.
Yeah. Well, I'm getting too big here. I mean, physically, I'm breaking chairs. I have to do some more exercises.
Bob, maybe
I have to spend a summer at your camp.
Aquatics, Bob, is the way to go.
Well, we don't have a pool here at WBAI, unfortunately.
In the Y. You got to go to the Y, Bob, and do aquatics in the water.
Uh-huh.
You'll love it.
People tell me that. I was talking to someone last night who said that she was doing aquatics, and it was very helpful.
Low impact.
You do kind of smell of chlorine, though, for a couple of days.
Well, I don't think so. It depends on the pool, I guess. I don't smell it. But I'm not such a good smeller.
That's right. You kind of blew out your nostrils at a certain point in your history, didn't you?
Mrs. Gravy can smell anything from about a half a mile away.
Give her my very rest regards.
She's so good in that movie too.
Yeah. Well,
as is your lovely wife.
Thank you.
And give her my regards.
I'll
suck your face through the holes in the plastic of your my phone and your microphone. Good night, Bob.
Good night. Stay in our ear.
Hi, you're on the air after Wavy Gravy. Hello. What happened?
Hello.
Yes, you're on the radio.
Yes, hi. I'd like to speak of Grandpa Al Lewis, who I thought did some amazing radio about 10 years or so ago.
Yes, he did.
When he was alive.
He did.
Yeah, to Cuba.
I mean, I still miss Saturday afternoons, those days when the show came on. I was talking to a friend the other day, and we were relating some of the topics that he went over. And he was a fearless individual that he really didn't care what anybody else thought, any authority. And the other factor was he would also go on like Howard Stern as a comedy guest and speak totally differently than his show. You know, I just thought that was an amazing thing how he went back and forth like that.
Well, he played Grandpa Munster for years, and he played on Car 54, Where Are You?, which was a great show about, I don't know, it's like they were Keystone cops, I guess you could call them. But Al was personally a very important guy in my life. He helped me a lot when I needed the kind of help that he gave me, which was to say, he gave me a plaque once that had inscribed on it, a friend is someone who heard you sing your song when you were young and can sing it back to you when you've forgotten it.
Right.
That was just great.
What really amazed me about him was his fearlessness of anybody, you know, any authority or any other viewpoints. He just, he went over some amazing topics.
Yes, he did. He did. And I miss him very much.
Yeah. Any stories you could relate about him?
I don't have him at the tip of my... Well, think about that. I just did tell you one little thing he did that was so good for me.
Yeah.
But, he did wonderful radio programs. Yeah. And, when I first met him, he was running a restaurant on Bleecker Street. And I went in there with my brother, who I also miss, and his son, who I talked to. And he said, we ordered something. And Al said, I want you to try our arugula salad. And I said, what's that? He said, I'll get it for you. And it was the first time I had ever tasted arugula. And my mouth lit up I never tasted anything that was that exciting and refreshing, and it didn't burn, but it had a peppery taste, and I loved it. And it's, I guess it's one of my favorite vegetables now. So I owe that and so much more to Al that, you know, I think of him actually whenever I pass a vegetable store.
Did you ever see the clip of him when Howard Stern did the FCC rally against the FCC, and Al Lewis was, I think it was Dag Hammarskjöld Plaza they were at, and Al Stewart went up to the microphone and started using the F word.
I heard that. Live.
Yeah, I mean, it's an amazing clip. You could see it on YouTube. And Howard Stern basically had to pull him off the stage because they were on the air, and they he says, "I'm going to lose my license, Al. You can't say that on the air." And Al just kept saying it over and over again. If you go to YouTube, you can see it.
Bleep the FCC. Bleep.
Well, under Al Lewis, what is it listed?
Maybe Al Lewis and Howard Stern, both.
Oh, well,
but that's a clip that Howard Stern still talks about to this day.
Well. That's great. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, did you punch that button now? Hi, you're on the radio.
Yeah, this is Pete in Jersey.
Hi, Pete.
I remember a story I heard Al tell on the radio.
Oh, great.
I'm about 60, so I remember being sort of a snob watching the Addams Family and didn't want to watch a cheap spin-off of the Addams Family because I thought that's what the monsters were until I saw Al Lewis. I go, wow. And now it's just a little kid, and I was amazed by him. But he used to love to tell a story, and you may remember this, about his mother being an activist on the streets in New York when he was a little boy, and she was fearless. And he used to always say, "I'm my mother's son." Right? Remember that?
Yes. He was fearless, and he was also a very serious actor. There's a play you might catch sometime, a movie rather, you might catch sometime that was produced by the Actors Studio, which he was a member, with Jane Fonda, I think.
And wow.
I'm sorry, I don't remember the name of it, but it was about, it was called Marathon, right? It was about a marathon, the 30s, when people were so hungry for money that they would go to a dance hall and they would compete to see who could stay on their feet.
No, they shoot horses, don't they?
That's right. The play was called Marathon, right? But they shoot horses, don't they? It's about these people, and Al Lewis is in the movie. He's the ringmaster who encourages the people to keep dancing for days and days and weeks on end until, you know, some of them collapse, some of them die, you know?
Wow. I never knew why they did that. I thought it was just a fad. I didn't realize
it was a money prize that was very attractive, you know. When there was no safety net, and the only thing close to a safety net was, you know, like found money, you know, and this was sort of like found money, except you had to sometimes give your life for it.
Yeah. A couple other things I wanted to say about Al is he would always get, and here's someone that, you know, like, I'm all over the place with this, but he was a true patriot. I mean, like, us activists on the left, we fight the enemy with no guns, you know? I mean, for our country, like, what, right in our country, what could be more patriotic than that, you know? And yet we're told, you know, go to Cuba, you commie, and he got those calls more than anyone on BAI, I know you remember that. I mean, he could never go on the air without having at least one call every time.
Maybe from women, and, too.
What
women,
is that?
Women would crank call him also.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
But he would tear into him, talk about being fearless. He didn't, man, if you called him up and told him to go to Cuba, he would
he would, you know, light into you.
Lean out of the phone and give it to you.
You fool! Yeah. You would say, you fool!
He ran guns for the IRA, he says, too.
Yeah. And I just really, you know, that was really something, that last call.
And he was a bodyguard for Garvey.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. That's right. He was up in New York State with Paul Robeson, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway, he was a wonderful character. And
you know, one thing he understood? He understood that I love that phrase that Mark Twain said. He said, love your country always, right? Love your government when it deserves it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's what I think these people call it, go to Cuba. Like, yeah, hey, I know some people in Bay Area say, yeah, I'd love to go to Cuba.
Right.
I mean, I've come across in magazines, you know, I grew up in the 50s, 60s, and I loved hot rods, you know, and I saw this one, this hot rod magazine had an article on all the 50s cars in Havana. They go street racing at night. I would love, and I restore old buildings, you know, I'm a carpenter, and I'd love to see the buildings in Havana. I used to work on a railroad. And I saw one time in this Newark Star Ledger an article about, in the travel section, about you could go to Cuba and ride the old steam engines and harvest sugar cane in season, you know? And then I saw in a surfing magazine an article about the awesome surfing in Cuba. So, like, I'm ready to go.
There was the Vence Vamos Brigade originally.
What's that?
Originally, there was the Vence Vamos Brigade.
And Margot Adler, who worked at BAI, was a member of the Vence Vamos Brigade. She went down there and she, you know, raised blisters and muscles cutting cane.
Uh-huh.
And she came back to BAI and raised cane.
Yeah.
And you know what, too? I can't understand. Like I say, I live in Jersey all my life. I'm almost 60. And I remember going down to Atlantic City in the 50s. And I remember when, you know, the gambling came to Atlantic City. I mean, all right, yeah, the town had its crime. But you go to those, it's just so sleazy now. And I can imagine what it must have been like for the people of Havana when all the, you know, United States gangsters come over there and make it a complete black market, organized crime pit, you know. No wonder they threw them out, you know. I mean, that went a long way, right, to cause the revolution, you know. You almost can't blame people for it. It's just a widespread corruption. And,
you know, I think they would have tolerated. They would have tolerated the casinos if they had provided jobs, and which they did. But it was the police that surrounded the casinos, and the army that surrounded the police, and the food that got delivered to the upper classes and not to the people in Cuba, that was the cause of the revolution, not so much the organized crime, which, in some ways is more ethical than many governments in the world.
Yeah, so, I hear that.
So
you mentioned before you had read an article in The New Yorker,
right?
And about, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, I had a couple copies of The New Yorker that had article, maybe you know about this, Bob Uruguay?
Could
in
be.
The 20s and 30s. Did you catch those articles?
No, I don't think I did.
Well, it turns out that Uruguay in the late 20s got a president that nationalized the oil fields that were already there, or the oil rigs offshore, or whatever. And
he was assassinated. Was he assassinated, or did American troops go in and try to change his mind? Yeah.
Yeah, eventually, but before they did, he took all the money that he had gotten from nationalizing the oil and put it into stupid things like education and giving everybody jobs. Next thing you know, there was no crime.
Well, this guy is creating a bad example for the rest of the hemisphere.
Right, right. So something had to be done.
Yeah.
And but before he did that, it was known as, in this article they described it, it was known as the Switzerland of Latin America because it had such a high standard of living. I mean, you had cradle to the grave, health care, you had social security, everything. And literally, the police had nothing to do. There was, like, zero crime. Everybody had a job. It had, oh, I know, it had a, one, this statistic, if you could look it up, the highest percentage of middle-class people per capita of any country to date. And, you know, it just... It, you know, and you had two callers before, and they were talking about, you know, I don't know what they were saying. Before the guy who was asking about what happened to his father in 77, so many of these questions that's going on right now can be answered from history. You know, the history, like, I was just reading an article in the Smithsonian, an old copy of the Smithsonian, about maybe not even a year old, and they were talking about Truman and for his second election in 48, and in 46, he was so hated because he couldn't get the country off everything that had been through war. He couldn't make the transition from end of war to peacetime.
Speaking of being hated, this is WBAI in New York City. We're also broadcasting on WFTE in Mount Cobb in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Thank you. Excuse me for interrupting you.
No, that's all right. So Truman, long story short, he was so hated that in a midterm election, there were 75 Republican seats gained in Congress, and the Republicans took that to be a mandate for what they wanted to do, and immediately they worked, pushing Taft-Hartley. They rolled back civil rights, and next thing you know, Truman won, against Dewey. But I see sort of like that with Obama right now. You know, he's as much as he may not be liked, with what you have on the other side.
Well, so, he makes a pretty convincing case that he only controls the executive, and unless the executive and the legislature and the judiciary cooperate, the change is almost, difficult, almost impossible.
Yeah, and exactly what happened with Truman. I mean, I think the
That's
people
right.
understood
Truman had what he called a do-nothing Congress.
Yeah, an obstructionist Congress.
Right.
Yeah, and it's the same thing that Obama's got. And I think there's a pretty large percentage of the voting population that understand that. They'd rather sabotage the country than let an incumbent president fix the country.
Well, a chief executive can still accomplish a number of limited measures by just signing executive orders, but they don't go as far as the force of legislative written law that Congress can do. But there is more, certainly more that he can and should do.
Yes, yeah, and another thing is FDR. You've heard this, right? That by 34. People were pushing him so hard because he hadn't done any real change since 29, and he said, make me do it. And I think I've heard Obama in so many words in 7 speeches.
Yes.
One time in Compton, he said, don't leave me up there. Like, don't let me, I can't do this without you.
Hold my feet to the fire.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And it's like, it's so true. Like, when the people lead, the leader can follow, and it's up to us. And like, we pushed harder against Nixon, right? And Nixon actually, of all things, put through affirmative action,
EPA, like, of all things.
What's that?
And Nixon even invented the EPA back in the early part of his first administration.
Yeah.
Who would have thought?
So anyway, I guess I'll get off now. It's good talking to you guys.
And good talking to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Take care.
Take care.
Thanks.
All right. Bye.
Are you leaving? for the country. You say the city brings you down.
Feeling that you'd like to cut out. You've been up, and now you have to get home for the 4 o'clock feeding, don't you?
No, but I'm going to rest up for our big screening tomorrow night at 8 o'clock.
Well, I'll be there.
I will too. Jessica will be there. Bill, I you know, no, you're not obligated.
No, but I like the picture again.
You can. Nice to have Bill take part in the Q&A if he wants to.
Oh, that'd be great. And and of course, all the film would be there through October 2nd. And there's a WBAI screening at 6:15 on Monday the 24th, with the potential for free popcorn.
Hey. And if you don't believe us about the film, you can read positive reviews in...
read about it in the Daily News.
That's right. You can read about it in the Daily News. You can read about it in the New York Times. You can read about it in the Jewish Daily Forward. You can read about it in Jewish Week. There's a review in the Wall Street Journal. There's a review in the Village Voice, and in Variety, and on the website. Again, this is my favorite of all of the reviews. The website is called
The Unrepentant
Marxist.
And it's good. It's really nice.
It's perceptive, and it's also a review of WBAI and in the period from the time that this unrepentant Marxist was 13 years old when he started listening to it. So
it's well worth the time to read. And then New York One tomorrow, there'll be a segment that airs throughout the day. So.
Wow. I think there were more critics there than an audience, it sounds like. That's tremendous.
Yeah, it's been great. But the audience last night was was phenomenal. I'm still, I mean, I think we're all just kind of still floating from that, and I'm sure tomorrow night will be equally as great.
There's a uniform consensus. They love it.
Especially want to thank the staff at the Film Forum.
Oh, they're so, I mean, they talk about, they're so great, and that's why, I think that's why so many filmmakers want to show their work there. They have, you know, very good taste, but they're really talented people in what they do.
Let me see, there's Karen, and there's
Mike Maggiore, Karen Cooper, Adam Walker, Adam Sachs. There's a whole team that we've been working with, and couldn't have asked for better collaborators for this release.
Well, I'm going to continue answering calls.
Good night,
you won't
Bob.
Be here. Give my best to Jessica and Lucas.
And we'll Bob, Bill. See you guys. Okay. See you guys at the movie theater. Thanks for letting me come on the show, and thanks for letting me work on this project these last 5 years. It has been and continues to been nothing but pure pleasure.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you very much.
Good night.
If you don't know where the Film Forum is, you don't live in New York City, but it's on, I think it's 309 West Houston.
That sounds right. Houston between 6th Avenue and Varick.
Yeah.
Look for the marquee.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you. Who is the person who does these film critics with an audience at the New School? I saw a terrific parody of that. You know what I'm talking about? I want to see it there.
James Lipton?
Yeah. I want to see him take it apart because it would be speechless, too.
We'll answer another call.
You are on the air.
Hello?
Hello?
Good morning.
Hello.
Good morning.
Bob, Bill?
Oh, yes. It's our 100-mile caller.
It's your 100-mile caller. I can't be happier for you guys.
No. Try being happier.
I'm trying my best. I hope I caught Paul before he left.
I think
the film I didn't see the opening yesterday. We had a lot of heavy rain up in the country, but I did see it at the Brooklyn Academy of Music, and it's just wonderful, and it's true. You do have to see it more than two or three times.
Well, I hope you'll be down
again. I think didn't you get like a 7-star rating on this, Paul?
Paul is gone, but there are 5. I don't think they have more than 5 stars in the news.
I know it's just a joke. It deserves 7.
Off the charts.
And I think you're entitled to diplomatic license plates. park wherever you want, or DD license plates anyway. Doctor of Delivery of Great Radio.
Shame on you.
It was also great to hear Wavy. I'm so glad to hear that he's feeling well. I saw him at his screening back in December of 2010, and I know that you weren't. I saw that you weren't there, Bob. So I just took the liberty of passing on your regards to him. And at the time, I was walking my dog, and he said, what does he do? And I said, he does the same thing you do. He makes people feel good. So he just, we had a good laugh. But it's so
well,
good
actually,
here.
Your dog does quite a few of what could be called tricks.
Yeah.
He actually speaks. He says your name.
He does. He says my given Native American name.
Is he with you now?
Anyway, the film...
Wait a minute. Is Dante with you now?
Yes, he is.
Could you get him to say something to the Radio Unnamable audience?
I possibly could. I think sometimes chicken will do the trick. Dante, come here. You want some chicken? Tell me.
We have to pay him scale if he goes on.
Speak. Come on.
That's Dante. Roo-rah-rah. Roo-rah-rah. The roo-rah-rah, Dante.
That was his late night voice.
He's good. Tell
anyway,
smokes too many cigarettes.
As far as sending something to Cuba, I think if send a copy of the film to Cuba, it would probably do some good.
Well, that's out of my hands.
Well, just a suggestion. And it's really funny. I had the upstate or the rural edition of the New York Times yesterday. When I opened up the art section and got to page, I see now it's C5, but there was no headline. There was no caption above the article, and I said, "This is very strange. This review doesn't even need a heading." But as it turns out, the page was cut off, and the caption was at the bottom of the page. It apparently went through the printer wrong. But I don't want to take too much time. You've had so many great calls tonight. I'm so happy, really. I'm so happy for you, Bob. And for WBAI, I think this may be a good shot of adrenaline for WBAI also.
Well, I heard some good news on WBAI tonight about the fracking battle.
Well, that's kind of where I was going with this. Both yesterday and today, it seems, Food and Water Watch had a... Rebecca Miles, I'm going to take that woman to dinner. She's done such a great job. And I've listened in to the open segments of the listener station board the last few days, and it's really amazing to open the phones to listeners for their suggestions. But back to the fracking, something that jumps out at me. I ran out to get the papers today in hopes that there would be coverage, and there was. There's a great photo of Paul and Jessica in the Daily News, but the thing that really grabbed me was the closing sentence of that review, and it's a quote from you. I hope that people see this movie and get a sense that things are more possible than they seem, and that applies to the natural gas drilling and the fact that it's been held off for nearly 5 years. And you know, I know you're going to say it wasn't you, it was other people and this and that, but if it weren't for your program breaking this news probably hundreds of times in 5 years or 4 years and 9 months, I don't think we would have gotten as far. And just so you know, someone who's senior to all of us, Dr. Theo Colburn from the Endocrine Disruption Exchange, when she was at Cooper Union 2 years ago, I had a few words with her, and she said, "We're counting on New York State to stop this." And that's one of the things that has kept me going. She's really, really a special, special person. So, and well into her 80s, and just a tireless worker. So, anyway, thank you for addressing this when I haven't called, and I apologize for taking time with it, but it is really important.
It's as important as the water we drink, you know.
Well, it is making
air, water, then food. Those are the priorities.
Hey, if you're trying to get to see this movie,
I'm going to try and make it in on Monday.
And the box office says that the seats are all sold out, but there might be a ticket at the next show. And you're looking for something to do downtown in that area, go to 116 McDougal Street and see The Return of the Blues Project with Danny Kalb and Steve Katz. It's on the...
Where are they?
The 22nd at 116 McDougal Street. That's the Gaslight now. 116 McDougal Street.
I lived on McDougal that's for hallowed, a while, 79.
Hallowed territory downstairs at the Gaslight.
Oh, geez, the 22nd. That's Saturday.
Right, it's
I'll give it my best shot. I'd love to see Danny Kalb.
Friends of Mike Porco, and it's
I have to get into
Bob
town
Porco
more often.
Was
but,
doing it,
but that's great. Possibly I can make it in on Saturday, but I'm going to try very hard for Monday. It'd be great to see some of the BAI folks, and also to see you.
Be good to see you, friend.
And Bill, you going to be there?
I hope so. I can't be sure. I have landlord problems at the moment, but I'll do my best. I will.
Well, anyway, thanks again for everything, and it'd be great to hear from John McDonough.
Yeah,
He sat in for Hugh Hamilton.
That's
today.
An amazing
did a great
program.
Job. And,
he did. That's great.
I nearly called in, but
yeah, it was an amazing program. I heard.
I backed out at the last minute. It would be great to hear from him.
Okay, thanks, Fred.
Thank you, Fred. Bye.
Anyway, Bob, take care, guys.
You too. Bye. Hi, you're on the radio.
Yeah, Bob, how are you?
Okay, how are you?
Okay, I just wanted to call in about a few things that were discussed earlier in the program, but before I do, I wanted to congratulate you on the release of the movie, and I hope to see it one of these days. I haven't seen it as of yet.
Well, I'll tell you where it's playing. I bet you probably know. The Film Forum. You're right. You were listening.
Yes, I was.
Where is the Film Forum?
I think it's at 309 West Houston Street. Is that correct?
That's right.
Yeah, there we go.
That's the same Film Forum where the film is showing.
I didn't hear that.
Oh. Anyway, thank you. Thank you for the saying that, but what did you want to really say?
Well, there's several things. The individual who called before and spoke about July 13th, 1977, that his father was murdered that night. And for some reason I've been watching all of these Rockford files, and Jim Rockford immediately popped into my head. And I was thinking he needs someone like that, a PI or somebody who handles dead case files, who could, you know, get through all of the bureaucracy and find out what really happened that night. I think it's a terrible thing that he's had to carry that around.
Yes, it is.
All these many decades. I remember that evening very well, as it turns out. And it's just a terrible thing. He's got to walk. It's 35 years, and he still doesn't know what happened to his father that night. And it would be a terrific thing if someone who had some skill in that area could somehow, you know, find out for him and put it to rest one way or the other. And that was one reason why I called. And the other one, well, there are several others. You were mentioning before about a government that gives back to its people as much as it asks its people to give to them. And it kind of brought to mind the journey of President Kennedy in a way in my mind. Mm-hmm. Because on on the inaugural address, he gave that famous, you know, ask not what you can do for your country line. And yet just a few 24, 26 months later, in April of 1963, he gave that speech at American University about not just a cold peace, but a real peace, where life would be worth living for everyone, and that we needed to examine, you know, the causes of what creates this incredible need to hold, to defend against perceived enemies.
Well, I can't believe what I'm seeing on New York One. There's one airplane climbing on another's back and making love to it. I mean, that's where our money goes. That's where the money goes for adventures like refueling planes in midair and making them pretend to be living creatures. Yeah. If we had some of that money in
people
in a better place, you know, we might all be.
I liked your idea about a way where we can educate our people for free. When you need to go to school and you need to be educated, regardless, that it's accessible. But I agree with you. Like, what, all of this money goes to the new weapon, and then when they get that weapon, it just keeps funding to all of this stuff. It just keeps going on and on and on.
What was the saying?
Had this caller who mentioned that we needed a change of heart.
Well, the difference between the men and the boys is the prices of the toys, something like that.
I'm sorry, I didn't get that.
There's an old, I don't know what you call it, some ism. It says the difference between the men and the boys are the price of their toys.
Right.
So.
Well, the toys are so sophisticated, it's scary. And the thing that, you know, this gets to another issue. You know, today, earlier today, there was a report about this guy named James Holmes, who was the alleged Aurora killer in Colorado. I don't know, have you gotten into any of this? Have you looked into any of this or heard anything about it?
No, usually when they come up with some sort of a story about a serial murderer, I change the channel. I feel like the possibility of knowing the truth is very, very, I don't know, negative. It's a negative number because, all of the noise around crimes,
right.
You know.
Well, I think that's,
well,
I think you
what, nailed what we need is someone like Hercule Poirot, you know, who would devote himself, or Sherlock Holmes. We don't have that really. We have CSI, you know, which is highly romanticized, and I don't think it's too real. Do you?
Well, it's scary. All of this stuff is scary. I mean, you had the ambassador in Libya who was
killed,
right?
Well, I don't know about that, but I think that's part of what's going on. The T party, the T stands for terror. We're living
right.
in a terror society now, and
right.
the terror is profitable for some people. People, the big ads, big ads in the newspaper about getting a better security staff for your business, you know.
Well, I think the whole economy is based on it at this point.
Yeah.
Which is why when you hear about this case in Colorado, this kid was going to school at the University of Colorado. He had been a graduate student. He'd been supposedly a star student in San Diego, California, and after 4 years, he gets a scholarship to go to school at Colorado, where he's a special, unique neuroscience candidate. So he's getting the scholarship, and within a year, he flunks out. And after flunking out sometime in late, I guess, May or early June, a month later, this event happens at a movie theater for the new Batman movie. And, you know, a number of people are slaughtered, and others are injured, and it seems that he's the perp. And they drag him in front of the cameras, and he's got orange hair. The first time they drag him before the cameras is the day they arraign him in court. And he looks completely gone, you know, completely, you know, either stoned or controlled in some manner. And then a gag order is slapped on the case, and you don't hear anything more or see anything more about the guy except what they leak at periodic times. But as I was reading about the case, I found out that his dad was a special, unique guy in mathematics and in computer programming. And he had developed a program which was able to analyze money being moved around the globe. And he was able to create this program that they could see when, for example, Wall Street, when people buy and sell vast amounts of stocks and bonds and equities, this program tracks who's buying it, and how much they're buying, and who they're buying it from.
It's all full of cocaine.
Excuse me?
The money is all full of cocaine, if you analyze it fine enough.
Well, the interesting thing is that his father was scheduled to testify before a Senate committee on the, I think it's called the LIBOR scandal. There's this thing called LIBOR, which is the amount of money that banks get, the interest that banks have to pay on the money they get from governments.
Right.
And there was a scandal that broke 2 months ago, and that also has been relatively hushed up. But his dad apparently is an expert.
Amy Goodman had good reports about it on Democracy Now!
You know, I'm on a cell phone, and it's hard to hear you, Bob.
I'm sorry.
It's like you're in and out.
Our telephone system is really in need of major surgery. And they talk about fixing it, but, you know, it seems to be, I don't know, seems to be impossible for the current management to manage.
Just having the money and the resources. But to make a long story short, again, it's one of these cases that the fact that the kid is in this neuroscience program, it's the examination, I guess, of the mind and how the mind controls things in your general nervous system. And the crime that he supposedly commits is committed with him wearing a mask after he sneaks into a movie theater and he throws these canisters into the movie theater as he's committing this crime, or as the perp, whoever was doing it with him. And, you know, I'm doing more and more reading on this whole area of neuroscience. And while a lot of it is geared, you know, towards, I guess, areas that can be helpful, if you spin the coin, and you, and depending on how you spin it and what your motives for doing the investigation or research in it are, it, it can likewise be linked to mind control and to manipulating people. And one of the teachers who he had been mentored by when he was, I think, in California, had done a piece on how people remember things. The theories of how we witness things and how we remember them can be manipulated so that we don't remember the order that they happened in, and we can even misplace the actual actors who were involved in things and how things transpired. So instead of remembering a baseball game as being the innings 1 through 9, you remember it in whatever order the manipulator wants you to remember it in, if you follow the theory behind that.
Well, sure. And David Amram did a score for a movie about mind control, The Manchurian Candidate.
Right.
The original one
was the better one. The one with Sinatra and Lawrence Harvey.
And there are, this was a movie that was made in the late 50s.
Early 60s.
Early 60s, well, right. Made in the late 50s and released in the 60s.
Right, right.
And I believe I saw it when I was in the Army in the 50s, so it must have been out then. But this science has progressed tremendously since then. That was like very primitive, the stuff that was being done that they called brainwashing. But there are people who claim that they have had chips implanted, you know, experimentally.
Where is Mae Brussel now that we need her?
Well, you know, it's funny that you mentioned Mae Brussel now, because, someone has to ask. The one thing, I loved Mae, but the thing that always knocked me out about Mae was that she always seemed to ask the right questions.
That's right.
And they were always the questions that no one was willing to seem to try to even attempt to answer.
Well, Mae is, there's a little segment of Mae in this radio-enabled documentary that we've been talking about all night. And in it, she talks about how she predicted the assassination of Robert Kennedy. And it's very, very brief and very quick. But there are hundreds and hundreds of hours of Mae Brussel as she, you know, predicted things. And she derived her information mostly from newspapers that had been printed above ground.
Right.
She said that you could follow who was promoted as a reward for around the time of an action, you could be on the track of finding out who was involved in it.
Right.
And she said these secrets are impossible to keep hidden, because there was always someone who will change their mind about the rectitude of it, or who will, have a stroke of conscience, or, just let it slip in a drunken moment.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Anderson, who certainly had plenty of flaws as a reporter and a human being, was on to some of that. And they tried to assassinate him by putting, they talked about it in the Nixon tapes, putting LSD on the with DMSO, so it would be absorbed in through his hands while he was driving his car. Mm-hmm.
I think Liddy was involved in
that. Nixon and Liddy.
Martha Mitchell giving interviews.
Right. I mean,
probably motive too.
Well, what goes on inside of the government has always been a fascinating subject. But late in my life, I decided that it was unknowable. Mm-hmm. That there were so many ways that they had devised of planting false leads and misdirecting, and for that matter, when what was her name? Dawn
Fawn?
Fawn.
Fawn Hall.
Fawn Hall was arrested with filth colonel. What was his name?
Ollie North.
Right. When she was arrested with Ollie North, they were trying to smuggle documents out, and they had stuffed them inside their clothes, and you know they tried to shred them, and I mean it was this was about Iran-Contra. They had the goods on the Reagan administration, you know, which had lied to Congress innumerable times. You know,
I think they have the goods on everyone in government. I think anybody who gets elected, they have to have leverage on them.
Well, J. Edgar Hoover certainly had.
He certainly did. You know, Bob, I do have a question about 1977 with you and what happened with you with BAI. Did you ever feel that your being removed off the air there or being kept out of BAI was connected to your having me on the show?
Well. My wife thinks so.
Why does Ralph Engelman think?
There were people who said that they were on the board of WBAI who called up and demanded that she be taken off the air in those days. They deny it now. I mean,
what does your gut tell you?
My gut.
Yeah,
my gut is very unreliable in more ways than I want to talk about on the air.
Tom, what do you think?
I just thought this is so crazy and mysterious what's going on that there's got to be some sort of outside hand influencing the actions of people at WBAI. I thought for sure we're doing too good a job, and we have to be, you know, we have to be messed with.
Did you feel it was connected with May in any way?
In part, sure. People complained about her, and I knew that she was onto something. Flo Kennedy was a constant caller, and she was definitely onto something. And the whole. Feminist movement was suffused with people who were telling the truth, and they couldn't have that. You know?
That's the most dangerous thing in the world is the truth.
Tully Kupferberg said, let me get this quote straight, if you told the truth for 24 hours, they'd have to kill you.
Well... It's almost 3. I'll let you make your getaway.
Thank you very much.
Bob, I love you very much. Hang in there.
Hey, take care. Thank you.
Okay, good morning.
Bye. You're on the radio. Good morning.
Hello.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. Calling from Seattle.
You are? Why? What's going on in Seattle?
I can't wait to hear when your movie's going to play.
Oh, well, it hasn't yet. I don't think there was even a festival west of the Mississippi.
But, oh, my.
But Seattle is one of our destinations, and now that Kino Lorber is the distributor, I think you should get in touch with them, and they'll tell you what their plans are for bringing it to Seattle. Why don't you come to New York?
Well, we're thinking about it. We're going to have a grandson. He's going to be born next few weeks. We're going to try to get out there at least by Christmas.
Oh. Hey. I hope by then you'll be able to get a copy of it to show your grandchildren.
Yeah, I would love to, and it's really been fun tonight. A lot of history here. I was with KPFK for many years.
What's your name?
Pamela.
You want to tell your last name?
Burton.
Pamela Burton.
Mm-hmm. And I was director of the archives for 7 years, and I had the honor of cleaning up WBAI before the move. I mean, taking a whole floor worth of, I mean, rooms full of tapes that came into the archives.
That's where they went.
Yeah. Very carefully taken care of, I promise
Before
you.
Before which move?
Well, the move, when you move to your current location, when you out of the old studio, out of the old studios.
Right, right. I talked to Brian DeShazer once in a while, and he's very dedicated.
Yes, he's fabulous.
He told me that in 19, whatever it was, when there was talk about selling the station and selling the archives of the station to, you know, I don't know, to whom, he was prepared to rent trucks and to take the tapes to a secret location to protect them.
Well, we did some of that. We had to do some of that because, you know, under one of the previous CEOs who had a thing about being clean and neat and didn't understand when she came to the archives, and this is when Valerie had been the manager, and she carefully loaded up 550 boxes of tapes. They were all the stuff out of the offices, and there was one room in particular I remember us going through, and you know, we found so many fabulous things, things that had been lost, things that were undiscovered. Mm. It was a whole series of jazz recordings that were including, I mean, just unbelievable people. And it was fundraisers for WBAI where they just air-checked the whole performance upstairs from one of the big jazz clubs there in New York. And they just, you know, they would hold these fundraisers for WBAI record and do the air checks, and then these pancakes of tapes just sat in boxes for years. And
this
when they came to the
free
archives,
music store.
We just little masking tape that said, you know, Mingus on it. unbelievable stuff.
My gold mine.
And the thing is that those archives are now preserved and digitized in some part, and they're available.
Yes. Yes, and Brian's doing some fabulous fundraising. He's going to be up here in Seattle, where we have a new, there's a new program to digitize a lot of stuff and release it through colleges.
Well,
of course, with a fabulous history.
In 1977, when I was exiled and they threatened to burn my archives.
Oh, gosh.
I just grabbed a few of them at random.
Yeah.
And took them up to WKCR and asked someone to hold on to them.
Uh-huh.
And lo and behold, it's years and years later, and someone calls me from WKCR and says, "Wow, we heard this great group, the Uni Trio, with like fantastic musicians. We want to make a record of it."
Yeah.
So that's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah,
they're
that's
gonna,
fabulous.
And they're going to do it on vinyl, that warm, beautiful vinyl.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
well, there was a series that John Cage had done at WBAI.
That's right.
That turned up in New Jersey.
Henry,
some guy called me and said, "Would you like these tapes back?" I said, "Oh, yes, we would."
Mm.
Yeah, there's just some remarkable history there. And you brought up, of course, Mae Brussels, who was so amazing. Her archives, I don't know what has happened to with
Brian,
those.
Someone named Brian Kennelly has them. You can access them on the net, I believe.
Oh, good. Oh, good. I had a dear friend who did a lot of work with Mae before she died. And they were, you know, there was the archives, and they definitely wanted to save them. So it's good to know somebody. I mean, you know, people care about these things, and as, of course, you know, your history and Wavy Gravy's history, he was another one that I got to work with at a point when we were helping to do fundraisers for SEVA. And, you know, these are people and experiences and thoughts and caring that we just can't let go lost, especially, of course, in the climate of today where people are supposedly don't care about one another. And we know from Pacifica's history how much everybody cares and how hard we all work together to save this magnificent history of the free speech movement. And I don't know how many times I've had to tell people about the history of WBAI's manager, the father of the slain civil rights worker.
He wasn't the manager. He was the head of the board of directors.
Dr. Carolyn Goodman.
And the mother of Goodman Schwerner,
right,
and
Goodman.
Cheney,
right,
was the head of our board for about 10 years, I would say.
Yeah, and those are the parents of Pacifica, mm-hmm. and we know what they have spawned, this these incredible people and that worked so hard to make this a better country. And I'm glad to hear that some of these pieces come up in your film. Bob Dylan, I heard, is Bob Dylan in there? Did I actually hear that the other night?
Right, that's right. There was a
week when I was listening to your
couple
show.
Couple of times that he visited the station.
Yes.
And there were recordings made of them.
You have some of those tapes, right?
Oh, do I? And you have, in the archive, you have.
Yeah.
You have more of them than I do.
Yeah, we came across some of those when we were. When we got this load of.
But let me tell you something. The quality of that archive of the Bob Dylan material is not good.
No.
It is not good, and I think it could be tweaked up some.
It should be, yes.
I mean, it was recorded, in pristine quality. Some of it here at the station. Some of it was recorded by people who were listening to it.
Uh-huh.
And it was taken to Canada, played up there. I mean, those tapes were around the world. They were on they're on the web, the net, and somehow you reassembled them all. Amazing stuff.
Well, another story about Al Lewis, which was so funny, because he used to come help us at KPFK during fundraising, and he would do the tally position. You know, he would help everybody's answering phones, and he's keeping track of things at the head of the desk. And the story was that, but a cute gal would go by and he'd want to pat her on the butt.
No.
Of course, this is the days of women's liberation. And he was one of those people that would really make us all turn our heads around a few times, you know, trying to get a hold of, hey, Al. And one of the stories he told, now this might be, it was in it, it relates to the archives, and it was Charlie Manson. There's this tape of Charlie Manson's music because he was he'd hoped to be a rock star or a music star of some sort. And this tape in the archives is of him singing. And Charlie Manson was the babysitter for Al Lewis's kids.
Oh, my God.
Before, he became Charlie Manson.
Well, if I said Crazy Horse, who would that mean to you?
Native American.
No. a Crazy Horse musician.
Yeah, Neil Young. The group.
The group Neil Young. Neil Young in his book said that he knew Charlie Manson and he tried to convince him to make a record.
Uh huh.
And there was a record of his music on ESP, the ESP label.
Uh-huh.
Some of it was, I would say, moderately awful. And some of it, there was a song about going around and collecting garbage that was...
Oh, my.
Okay, I used to play that.
Yeah, well, we had it in the archives, and at one point I understand that a lawyer came and said, Charlie does not want this music released.
Oh.
So it sits in the archives amongst, other things.
He'd rather be released himself.
Yeah, right.
Paul Krasner, Squeaky and Mama Cass.
And Paul Krasner interviewed Charles Manson. And was it, did he interview Manson or the Manson women?
I think the Manson women.
Ah.
I think so.
Well, that's...
Squeaky.
Great history, and I thank you, Pamela, for calling
in. You guys were joking before with Wavy about how old. Can I ask how old you are, Bob?
79.
Hey, that's fabulous. And you've been on BAI now. You've come back to BAI. I mean, I'm listening on internet radio, so for those people that don't know this fabulous thing you can do with a computer stream, I listen to all the Pacific stations, and it's really a blessing here in Seattle. We have some good radio, but nothing like Pacifica.
Well, what are you doing in Seattle?
Oh, I own a solar energy company. My husband and I are putting up solar everywhere we can possibly put it up, and Seattle's a great place for it, and it's one of the things I really have Obama to thank for.
Do you have a website?
Yes, it's Puget Sound Solar, and it talks a lot about the importance of how,
I love
to get
off hear
oil.
That Puget Sound.
Well, Puget great. Sound Solar. People always want to call it Puget, but it's P-U-G-E-T. Sound solar. And, you know, we are one of the cities that got targeted by the Obama administration for funds to help people in their homes do all the energy upgrades that they can do. You know, you take a 100-year-old home, and with insulation and double-pane windows, you can save an enormous amount in energy use and do an awful lot with solar, believe it or not, in Seattle. And if we can do it in Seattle, you can do it anywhere in the country. But because we have really fabulous long summer sunny days, we produce more than we need during the summer, and then we get to use that in the winter because we just spin our meters backwards and use the excess
during the
winter.
There was some great, great radio in Seattle.
Yes.
There was,
yes.
Wasn't that where KRAB was?
That was Crab.
Right.
Yeah, and it
and
was another
crab,
thing.
The Crab Nebula.
The Crab Nebula, exactly.
It was
and when,
not a network, it was a nebula.
When I was at the archive, it was another thing that came to us from WBAI's archive, were the Crab Nebula tapes, which were, you know, the idea was that you were, before, you know, there was satellite, before there was any way to the way you shared tapes was by sending a tape from one station to the next.
They carried them by Pony Express in the early days, right? And
exactly.
I remember we were saying, did the tapes arrive from the coast yet, or are we going to have to improvise? Well, we were about to rebroadcast that talk by Malcolm X, but it has not arrived yet from California where we sent it. We should have made a copy of it, but we didn't have any tape.
We didn't have the tape.
Right.
So in that WBI collection, I was able to find quite a few that were on that circuit, and many of which were actually originated at Crab. So when I moved up here from Los Angeles, there was this box of tapes that I felt like belonged to Crab. And they do have... kind of have a station, because when they sold their station, the frequency, which was a big mistake, I think a lot of people realized later, they started another station up in Edmonds, and
Alberta?
A few miles up the coast here.
In Canada?
And, but then they have actually an archive based here in Seattle, and they do a lot of audio, interesting productions. So I've been there to see what they have and took them in the set of tapes that they, you know, is history of their archive. The sad part was they lost most of their archive, the history of the radio station, the recordings that would have been done on the station, because they had left them in a basement of a church that got sold, and those all went to the dump. So they really lost a lot. But again, we really have Valerie to thank at WBAI for saving. It was 550 boxes that were shipped to me, and by boxes, I mean moving boxes. So each one could have had 20 to 25 reels in it. And there was just a lot of really fabulous WBAI history. And other Pacifica tapes were, like you said, you know, there might have been a tape lost out of the archive.
The WBAI archive is also online.
Yes. Right.
People can order copies of these tapes for themselves.
Yes.
Do you think that it being such a radio nexus that it helped push back the WTO? It did hold it back for a day or two, if I recall. The people had their stuff together.
Hey,
yeah.
We are going to have to get our stuff together and get out of here. Ibrahim Gonzalez is in the room. In the room. Good morning, Ibrahim.
Hey.
You've been sitting here and putting your earphones on and... You know, making notes, and you're wearing your WBAI free speech T-shirt. That's great.
Yeah, I'm glad that you recognize me with my clothes on. And the lady in Seattle, what is it?
I don't believe I ever...
You ever had the pleasure of seeing me at the beach?
No, oh, no, I haven't.
Never saw you at the beach. Never, I don't know, I've never had any other experiences with you, but I'm open to suggestion. Hey, I'm going to be 80 soon. I may as well try anything, you know?
Yeah. And it's never too late. And then the lady in
sometimes it's too late.
And the lady in Seattle, hi. Thanks for reaching out and calling us here from Seattle.
Oh, I tell you, it's just fabulous to hear WBAI.
Well, we're going to be looking to hearing more from you as well.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thank you very, very much.
Recorded on 2 tracks. When I go to Baltimore, need no guard.
old cry, he don't pout when I sing Colorado.